Welcome to ForceDream.com. Today we're going to talk about how to take your worldview as though it were on translucent paper and put it over the truths from the Word and see where they match and or where our worldviews are just hanging out there somewhere with no foundational
like
truth
so,
to them.
You're so philosophical today. Is that because of our topic that we're looking at today?
Oh, I don't know. I just know that for me, it's shocking sometimes when I really believe something and then I come across something in the Word and go, well, how did I get here?
Well, philosophy is the study of the fundamental nature of knowledge, reality, and existence, especially when considered as an academic discipline. Now, that's the you know, standard
definition
of it. But what I've come to realize over time is that just as we can't escape our personal worldviews and the way they have been shaped in our lives, because everybody has a worldview shaped on the events of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's life looks different, has a different story. Well, the same is true with our philosophy of life. You know, we act upon our core values then to form our philosophies, which then dictate our choices. So there's kind of a string that goes together. So you're a philosopher. You know, we're all philosophers mm-hmm. in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah, whether we actually talk about it, we live out of what we believe. And we don't always exactly know what that is sometimes in our brains to actually articulate it. But if we watch our own lives, if we look at ourselves sort of outside of ourselves, you can figure out what you believe.
Well, and God knew that we were made to be philosophers and that we would be philosophers. And I think that's why we have the book of Ecclesiastes. I think Ecclesiastes is one of the most philosophical books ever written. And it's smack right in the middle of the Word of God.
Yeah. So one of the things he talks about is that, or one of the thoughts is that we can't change anything. We can't affect any lasting change.
Yes.
And that's just interesting. He talks about it in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, and it says, "Call me the quester. I've been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I looked most carefully into everything, searched out all that is done on this earth. And let me tell you, there's not much to write home about. God hasn't made it easy for us. I've seen it all, and it's nothing but smoke, smoke and spitting into the wind. Life's a corkscrew that can't be straightened, a minus that won't add up. And I said to myself, I know more, and I'm wiser than anyone before me in Jerusalem. I've stockpiled wisdom and knowledge. What I've finally concluded is that so-called wisdom and knowledge are mindless and witless, nothing but spitting into the wind. Much learning earns you much trouble, and the more you know, the more you hurt."
Philosophy, and when you look at what he is just processing here,
mm-hmm.
This is the guy. He had everything. He did everything. You know, he was everything,
mm-hmm.
the vanity of having, the vanity of doing, the vanity of being. He had everything. And in the final analysis, he came to the conclusion, and this is early in the book.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's laying this out
in the first chapter.
He's saying, I can't really change a thing, because he understood that life is like a steady flowing river. And there are certain things that we can't do anything about.
Mm-hmm. It just keeps moving. Then he goes on to talk about possessions. Basically, he says, I've had it all and it wasn't enough.
Now, again, this is Solomon. So you got to think in terms of he's the baddest king who ever lived related to territory and money. So
uh-huh.
go ahead.
I said to myself, let's go for it. Experiment with pleasure. Have a good time. But there was nothing to it. Nothing but smoke. What do I think of the fun-filled life? Insane. It's inane. My verdict on the pursuit of happiness? Who needs it? With the help of a bottle of wine and all the wisdom I could muster, I tried my level best to penetrate the absurdity of life. I wanted to get a handle on anything useful we mortals might do during the years we spend on this earth.
Yeah, and so he's describing the vanity of having and doing and being kind of all right there in that particular passage.
Yes, and then he goes on, and I won't read it all, but he talks about everything he did, the houses he built, the vineyards he planted, the fruit trees, how he irrigated them. I mean, he goes on and on, piles up silver.
Well, and you think about that. If you're anything like me, I'm a builder, and I'm kind of a doer, and I love conceiving something, executing it, even if it takes me a long time to see it come to fruition. But Solomon realized that even after that happened over and over again, it still left him feeling flat.
Yes. Yeah, it did.
And that's kind of the nature of what you learn from Solomon's life as well as from philosophy. And then that kind of rolls over then into the whole idea of who you are as a person. Because it's one thing for people to forget what you do, but what about forgetting you?
Yeah, just not being remembered. This is verses 12 through 17. I'm just going to take one little paragraph out of it.
And we're in Ecclesiastes chapter 2.
Yep. When I realized that my fate's the same as the fool's, I had to ask myself, so why bother being wise? It's all smoke, nothing but smoke. The smart and the stupid both disappear out of sight. In a day or two, they're both forgotten. Yet both the smart and the stupid die, and that's it. He's feeling kind of hopeless.
Boom. And basically his conclusion is that he detested life because it was smoke, it was striving after wind, and in the final analysis, did he achieve a satisfied mind? And it doesn't really look like he did he?
It doesn't look like it.
And so
he learned a lot of things.
And what I learned from Solomon is that, okay, just because you have everything, just because you are everything, just because you achieve everything, does that mean that you're going to have a satisfied mind? Mm-hmm. Answer, no.
And he also had hopes, but he understood the bitterness of seeing those being unfulfilled.
Yeah. Well, and as an older guy and as a king, he just saw that we're just a bunch of gatherers. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wrote here, I'm one of the innumerable gatherers and collectors. I put my stuff together. And, you know, you've seen this in your own life when somebody in your family has passed away or whatever. And, you know, one man's treasure is not necessarily considered treasure after the man or the woman is gone.
Yeah, and he even goes further than that. He says, I can't take it with me. No, I have to leave it to whoever comes after me, and whether they're worthy or worthless. And who's to tell? They'll take over the earthly results of my intense thinking and hard work.
So this is kind of the downside of the book of Ecclesiastes. There is a lot of encouragement and perspective in it. The first one is in chapter 3, and we're not going to, in verses 1 through 15, we don't have time to talk much about that. But everything happens in its time. Eternity is set in our hearts. And time is of no consequence to God. We have trouble with that. Mm-hmm. We think that God is just as bound by time as we are, and he's not.
And just so you kind of know where I am in this passage, it's the one where there's a time for this and there's a time for that. As you keep going, he makes sort of a conclusion. I've also concluded that whatever God does, that's the way it's going to be, always. No addition, no subtraction. God's done it, and that's it. That's so we'll quit asking questions and simply worship in holy fear. Whatever was, is, whatever will be, is, that's how it always is with God.
Well, you know, one of the things that you get from the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're talking about philosophy, and that's why you can look at the book of Ecclesiastes as a backdrop for you to look at the philosophies around you and to consider them. And chapter 5, why don't you read that, just the first couple of verses of that.
Yep. And give me a second.
Ecclesiastes 5.
Seeing how our printer didn't work and I'm using my computer.
She's scrolling like crazy.
Okay, watch your step when you enter God's house. Enter to learn. That's far better than mindlessly offering a sacrifice, doing more harm than good. Don't shoot off your mouth or speak before you think. Don't be too quick to tell God what you think he wants to hear. God's in charge, not you, and the less you speak, the better. Overwork makes for restless sleep. Overtalk shows you up as a fool. When you tell God you'll do something, do it now. God takes no pleasure in foolish gabble. Vow it, then do it. Far better not to vow in the first place than to vow and not pay up. Don't let your mouth make a total sinner of you. When called to account, you won't get by with, oh, sorry, I didn't mean it. Why risk provoking God to angry retaliation? But against all illusion and fantasy and empty talk, there's always this rock foundation. Fear God.
So he's painting a picture of not only the futility of life, but the things that he learns to take into the face of that, because you have your philosophy, you've sifted through your philosophy, and now you're trying to make sense of that within all of the other things that people say. And this is, I wanted to end with these couple of passages here because.
Well, can I ask you a question before that?
Yeah, go ahead.
So in the middle of all this, you know, why do we read this book? What does it give us?
Perspective.
Because it seems depressing.
Perspective. It's perspective. Because you have to have a sobering view of life in order to experience joy. You have to have a sobering view of life in order to experience peace. All of those things are on the foundation of taking an honest look at life. And I think that's why Solomon was given to us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think too, sometimes I think if I had more, I'd be happier or I'd worship God better.
Answer, no.
Yeah. And he's proof of, he's really proof of all that.
This is out of Colossians. It says, see to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the traditions of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ. And you can go ahead and read that same verse in the message there, right there at the bottom.
Okay. Watch out for people who try to dazzle you with big words and intellectual double talk. They want to drag you off into endless arguments that never amount to anything. They spread their ideas through the empty traditions of human beings and the empty superstitions of spirit beings. But that's not the way of Christ.
So all philosophies should be tested by what we know to be true if we are to avoid those which are detrimental to the soul. Perhaps if people had thought through the implications of Hitler's philosophies and beliefs, history would have looked differently. Mm-hmm. And so I know that's an extreme example, but the reality is that mankind, when left merely to our philosophies without an anchor, that's how far we can drift. Thanks for listening today on that cheery note. See you next time.